Welcome to the best damn podcast ever. My name is Blake Buck, and co-hosting with me this week, we've got William Miller.
How you doing, Blake Buck?
Doing good. We've also got Justin Fick.
How's it going, gentlemen?
And this is your gaming news for Wednesday, June 22nd, 2011. All right, guys, after last week, we had so much news, now not so much news. Like, we just get the 1 week of delicious news, and now it's back to nothing for another year.
But it's the post-E3 dearth.
Just Fick, why don't you start us off? What you got for us?
All right, so I got sort of a double header. So the first part of it is THQ has closed Chaos Studios. They've been shut down. So they have Chaos Studios is the developer of Homefront.
Look, they should have known, all right? They released a game that made less than an 8 on Metacritic. They should be shot. They should be taken out in the street and murdered.
They just brought back out by the shed and put out of their misery.
Yeah, man, that sucks if you're, like, a big Homefront fan, right? Because, like, I guess there's no DLC now. I guess there's no, like, online support for your game anymore because everyone got fired.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, they handed it off to a different studio, right, Justin Fick?
I think so. The news story that I'm reading off of is actually still loading, so I have no idea of the details. But, I would imagine that it can't not, you know, they can't just let it blow away in the wind like dust. So I would imagine someone's taking it over. I would imagine, you know, I think support is not very long lived at this point. I mean, they've obviously been, you know, shut down because Homefront didn't do as well as it should have for whatever reason. But yeah, I mean, I can see a little bit of DLC support in the short term. And then after that, I would imagine it would just go away.
Yeah, it doesn't even, this article doesn't even mention who has it now. Like, who cares? It's just throw it in the goddamn trash.
God, that's so sad. It was not a bad game. Like, and you know, Chaos, not a bad studio. It, like you said, Blake, you know, this is a shame that if you make it below an 80, you're on the chopping block for these big publishers.
And I know we're going to get to this in a minute about Duke Nukem Forever, but let me just preface this by saying it's getting scores very low, and like, it's like below a 7, it really doesn't make a difference. Like, the average score, I think, for Duke Nukem Forever is like a 4. But, like, that could be a 7. It still doesn't matter. It's all the same to the gaming industry.
All right, I'm looking around a little bit, because I'm actually looking for a quote related to this closure, because I forget the exact wording of it. But I have found out that THQ's Montreal studio is taking over all development and creative management for Homefront.
Yeah.
So it might not be going away completely, but
yeah, I bet. Well, then again, you know, it seems like they're re-releasing it. Fuck, if they're re-releasing Alone in the Dark, that shit PlayStation version, like it was a classic. Who knows? Maybe maybe, you know, someday we'll see a Homefront 2 drug out of the closet when they get real hard up for IPs. It's like you got to put out an IP once and have it fail, and then maybe next time around it can work.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's the DJ Hero formula,
right?
I cannot find the quote that I'm looking for because the one place that I know has it is not loading for me. But it's THQ issued a statement that went along with the closure. Okay, I found it. So, the statement, it's just so full of fucking euphemism and just beating around the bush. It's, the press release reads, THQ confirmed today that it has made a strategic realignment within its internal studio structure.
Good old strategic realignment. The nice way of saying fuck you.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I mean, just imagine, like these guys are in the, you know, in the middle of like crazy fucking crunch to get this game out, then, you know, they're fucking putting in long hours and overtime, and they finally get the game out and it does all right, not phenomenal, you know, it gets respectable Metacritic, you know, scores, not phenomenal, and they'll get strategically realigned out of their fucking jobs. I mean, what a spit in the face to all these people. Like, I hope they just, I don't know.
Okay, you know, bleeding heart, whatever. Baby, it's a game industry, son. Capitalism at its peak, baby. Come on. Do it.
I understand that, but as THQ, you got to have a fucking sack between your legs and say, look, we didn't have the money to pay these people, so we're letting them go. Or, Homefront didn't do as well as we thought, so we're letting them go. It's not fucking strategic realignment within internal studio structure.
Yeah.
This is nothing.
You've got to sugarcoat it.
I don't understand why, though. Everybody knows what's going on. Like, everybody knows what that means. So why not just say it? Like, we can't. Here's what I think it is. I think they can afford to pay these guys. I do. But they don't want to, because their game wasn't as good as they wanted it to be. And so they fire them. That's what I think it is.
I mean, either that or it's just, it's just this business of, like trimming the fat, It's, maybe they could pay them, but maybe they can just close the studio and hand it off to people that already, that they're already paying.
I don't want to sound like an asshole, okay? Ubisoft Montreal, pretty solid developer, right? They put out some pretty solid hits, right? I mean, I look at this, I see this game that didn't do well, right? And we sunk a lot of money to it. I mean, I'm trying to save money. I'm trying to advance our, our publisher and advance, our profits. I mean, from a sheer business level, this makes sense. I'm saying you can't cry all day for these guys. This is how it works, unfortunately.
I know, but I mean, like I'm going to go out on a limb here and say something blasphemous. Quotes like this from THQ actually make me respect Bobby Kotick a little more. because Bobby Kotick is a money grubbing asshole, and he's very open about being a money grubbing asshole.
That's true.
He's like, look, like, I just want to make a shitload of money. I want to milk franchises. I want to pay people less. But he's very honest about what he does. there's none of this bullshit sugarcoating, trying to giving you a spoonful of honey to make THQ's dick go down your esophagus better. He's very frank about being a money grubber.
I do not want a honey-coated dick in my esophagus. Let me just say that much. Well, there is some, good news right now. You got another story about New York game development.
Yeah, so Chaos Studios is an NYC developer that has gone away, but NYC is getting another developer in Avalanche. So Avalanche is setting up a new AAA-focused studio in Manhattan.
Mm.
So, as you guys know, they did Just Cause.
Right.
So the new studio will focus on creating, quote, large-scale, online-enabled original IP for next-generation consoles, handhelds, and PC.
I don't know if they're ready to. It sounds like they're trying to be one of the big dogs now, right? I don't know if Avalanche is. I mean, was Just Cause 2 so amazing that you're like, yeah, we're gonna move you guys to an incredibly expensive place to make video games and tout you as a AAA developer? I mean, are they ready for that?
Okay, Justific, shed some light on this. Why the fuck would you start a new studio in New York City? Why? Why?
They're all coming after Justin Fick is what it is.
That must be because New York State does not give any kind of tax incentives compared to what you can find fucking Texas or Georgia or North Carolina or, any of these places that.
Or Nevada.
Just like, they blow you when you set up shop in their state and they don't charge you any money or taxes.
You don't get
years.
To.
And
New York State, you have to blow them to get permission to set up shop.
Right.
In
they
their
send
state.
A Lysol to your house. It's very similar to Sony PlayStation, actually.
A space Lysol. That is the most racist shit you've said in a long time. Thank you, sir.
Saying, man.
No, I totally agree. Like, I mean, I guess if it happens to be that, like, the people who are already making the game, like Freeverse, I would imagine the folks who are already living in New York, it's like, let's make a game studio. Cool. Now we, okay, whatever. But it seems stupid to take a developer from, I believe, Sweden, Avalanche Studios, and be like, huh, where are we going to put this new studio? How about in the most expensive place ever to develop video games? I don't get it.
Yeah, it seems sort of like, I mean, like, New York does have a good game scene, like, especially indie games. Like, it's wonderful.
Do they, though? Like, yeah. You got Rockstar, you got
AAA,
Rockstar.
AAA, not so much. AAA, we got Rockstar,
it's got
a great indie scene.
Don't get me wrong, great indie scene there, but there are only a handful of companies there. It's not like some bustling.
Yeah, it's kind of like a tier two city or a tier three city as far as the AAA is concerned. Like, it's no Los Angeles, it's no
Timonium, Maryland, is what I'm saying.
Rockstar, right? Rockstar North is based out of Scotland. I mean, what does Rockstar, the one that's in New York, does that actually do any development?
Rockstar North is mainly marketing. I've actually been in there before.
No. Rockstar North is the old, that used to be DMA Design, who made Lemmings, and they are based out of not Scotland.
Okay.
North Scotland, I think.
I misspoke. The Rockstar in New York is mainly a marketing PR.
Sort of like their think tank.
Yeah, they do like my buddy works up
games.
There. He cuts together all like the trailers and stuff. That's where a lot of their marketing material comes from, and like their head honchos sit high and pretty there. Yeah. And they're actually right either below or above the 2K headquarters office.
Yeah, they're all in the same building.
Yeah.
Oh, they're making dirty looks at each other in the elevator. You assholes.
Same thing. I mean.
Well, I heard they kind of have a Rockstar kind of has like the, forgive the pun, kind of like the Rockstar mentality, and 2K Games has to like bend over to give them stupid shit.
Oh, I'm sure. That's like the gift horse, right?
Yeah, exactly. Rockstar.
If they leave or they decide to start making dumb games.
Yeah, right. What's 2K? What's 2K falling back on if Rockstar disappears? We got a few things, but I mean, yeah, that's clearly their AAA like workhorse.
Well,
BioShock 4.
BioShock, yeah.
That's true. So what is there? Are there any details about this new studio, Justin Fick, or is it all up in the air at this point?
They're going to open the studio up with 50 developers within the first 2 years. So all the people that just got fired from Chaos, they got a new home opening up right away. So, I mean, that's good. I mean, these people are not being thrown into the wind in New York City, which is a horrible place to be thrown out on your ass in.
God.
So, I like it. Plus, good. You know, being in New York, I like getting developers here. I think it's cool. No complaints ever.
So, I've got a news story for you guys. We're talking about E3 a little earlier, right? And, you know, I know that you guys are like, okay, finally E3 has happened. We can finally put all the E3 rumors to rest. Guess what? We've already got some rumors for next year's E3 floating around the internet. This comes from videogamer.com, which is a website I've never been to, but sounds awful. Like, that's where I would go if I was, like, I don't know, just getting online on the internet for the first time today. Like, I like video games. Where do I go? Videogamer.com, of course.
I'm a video gamer. This site speaks to me.
So, allegedly, Microsoft, they say that Microsoft is going to be unveiling their new console at E3 2012, which certainly makes sense. But what I think is more interesting here is that they're pegging Time Splitters 4 as being a launch title for, I believe that's what this said, a launch title for, if not a launch title, a early released title for the new Xbox console, which is yet to be even announced. So I didn't realize this, but Crytek, who develops Crysis and Far Cry and all that jazz, acquired the rights to Time Splitters back in 2009 when they bought... They just bought up everybody at Free Radical, probably fired most of them. That's what you do when these things happen. But, yeah, I remember hearing rumors of Time Splitters 4, and then that game just kind of evaporated, and I guess they're claiming that it's now been rolled into a new sort of push for the, I don't know, Xbox 720, 1080 snowboarding. I don't know what they're going to call it. But, I think Time Splitters 4, if this is true, and Time Splitters 4 is going to be on this new Microsoft console, It's been too long. Once your game's been in development for too long, it's going to suck dick.
Duke Nukem.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry. We're getting to that soon. Like, a buddy of mine keeps trying to convince me that the new Shadow of the Colossus game, the new or project, what is that called? I can't remember.
Project
the Last
Team
Guardian.
Ico guys, right. Yeah, the Last Guardian.
Yeah. A friend of mine is like, oh, Blake, look at this game. It's going to look so cool. And this friend of mine, he never even played the original games, right? I played both of them, and I love them dearly. But I was like, look, you got to look at the hard science, okay? If a game has been in development for more than 4 years, it's going to be shit. It's just hard fact.
I know. There's a couple of people who are exempt. I mean, you have to earn the reputation for being exempt. For instance, Valve is exempt. Blizzard is exempt.
Okay. But unless you're Valve or Blizzard, perhaps the two greatest game developers of all time, unless you're one of them, your game's going to blow. So I'm sorry, I got my suspect eye big time on Time Splitters. And I guess maybe not the new Xbox, but certainly the Time Splitters 4, it looks like it's going the way of Duke Nukem.
It's got a lot to live up to, and it's got a new studio, so... That's a little shaky.
I don't know. I was going to say like, oh, well, Crytek, they've put out really solid games. But at the same time, I said the same thing about Gearbox right before Duke Nukem came out. Which, speaking of which, William Miller, why did you get to today's most painful news?
We've started to preemptively shit on this. We should just like get it over with. It's going to happen. Duke Nukem. Sucks dick. I'm going to open this up to Justin Fick, who's much better at shitting on this stuff than I am. But let me first set the stage. So this game, we first saw the gameplay trailer. Actually, we first got hands-on with Duke Nukem Forever at PAX this year. They had a big booth with a throne and booth babes and all this mm-hmm. stuff. And
wasn't their booth called something like Titty City?
It was pretty ridiculous, and I actually...
That's genius, though. Wait, before... Okay, it's shit. I love Titty City.
So they had this thing, and the reception was lukewarm. I think at this point, like, a couple of my friends played it. I played it. I didn't like it. But people that were coming off the show floor, you know, the allure of Titty City was just... It was just too much. They were sort of, you know... They were like, okay, this game could be pretty good. We get it in our hands after E3. It's getting terrible ratings. It's not fun. It looks old, and it's offensive in a bad way.
Listen, before we shit on it too much, I just want to say, like, objectively, this game is getting absolutely abysmal scores. I think on, like, game rankings, it's got, like, a 45 percentile, which, I mean, if your studio gets shut down after a 7, if you've got a 45...
Yeah, this is just like your studio is nuked from orbit.
Yeah, and it's one thing for like you know, who's ever heard of these guys? It's one thing for like tank battle to get a 4, okay? But this is a relatively large like developer from a relatively large publisher on a game that on a relatively large franchise that they've sunk a lot of time and money into. I mean, okay, sure, Duke Nukem Forever's had a lot of time, but just if we just look at the recent the Duke Nukem Forever proper, right, which has only been in development for about 2 years. When it got into Gearbox's hands. This is a big release for them. I don't think this is the lowest scores I've seen for a big released game on a big release franchise from a big release publisher ever, I think.
I think you're right. And I think that this game, and I heard this quoted somewhere, it's like watching one of those spoof movies like what's not another teen movie. It's like that.
Or like Meet the Spartans.
Or Meet the Spartans, exactly. It's like they took all these things that people thought were funny in the right context and kind of threw them all together into this game.
Can I stop you for just a second? Not Another Teen Movie has some amazing moments in it. All right. I understand that movie is shit. Guilty pleasure, but there are some amazing jokes in that movie.
And listen, I'm sure Duke Nukem has some
right.
funny
it, it
moments
should,
in it,
it probably
too.
Has some gems, right?
But right? What I'm saying is, like, this is not an organically funny product. Like, the original Duke Nukem, the original, like, shooter and the side-scroller, they were funny not because they were trying too hard to be, right? It was genuine. And this does not resonate as being genuine with a lot of people.
Before we get into like breaking down the Duke Nukem character, because I really want to talk about that in a minute, but just explain to us like why on a gameplay level this game is shit, because I haven't really seen much of its gameplay.
All right, so the kind of the two things that hit you the quickest are, you know, like we've talked about, it has, you know, really base, unfunny, offensive humor, offensive in a bad way. But the problem is, like, it doesn't even have the decency to be a halfway good shooter. Like, it's a piece of shit. I mean,
was the original Duke Nukem, though, just like an amazing shooter that was, you know, cutting it? I mean, it wasn't cutting edge at the time, or I mean, was it? I don't know. I guess it was. I don't know. If 0 to 10 is like the quality of your gameplay, maybe the original Duke Nukem was like a 7, you know. And apparently, this one is a 4.
A little higher. I don't know if it was the most technically advanced first person shooter at the time, but it had a lot of innovative things in it. A lot of the weapons were very innovative. They hadn't been seen before. The shrink ray, the freeze ray, you know, the things that the levels could do. Like the fact that one level was a porno theater and you can and the curtains would open up and there'd be a movie playing. And,
the environments had never been seen before.
The environments were very unusual
at the time to see an urban environment with lots of interactivity, like light switches now. Oh, I can flip the lights. And it's like, now that's no big deal. But like back then, that was amazing. Oh, I can.
Yeah, I think the cool thing about Duke Nukem, the original 3D shooter one, was that you found the designer everywhere in that game. Like whenever you thought to do something clever, you found the designer there rewarding you for it. Like you were saying, you see a light switch in most games, you can't flip it, but you, in this one you can, or you see the porno movie behind the curtain. Like all there's an attention to detail in the original that is sort of the same in this one. Like there are the same sorts of things where you can interact with stuff in weird ways and all that. But again, all the games do that now.
It's also presented differently in this one compared to Duke 3D. So in Duke 3D, it had all these cool things you could do. You could start the porno movie. You can go play a full game of pool on the pool table. You know, you can use all these items, but it's just things that you go and explore, and they reward you for it. In Duke Nukem Forever, you're pretty much directed to them. It's like, hey, you know, like in the very intro of the game, there's a urinal, and it says, you know, it gives you the button prompt to piss, and you piss in the urinal, and it's like this is a fun thing that you could do in Duke 3D that you can just go in there and discover and do, but in this game it makes you do it. And like in the right after that, there's a, you know, it shows off the whiteboard, but it directs you to it. And one of the characters says, "Hey Duke, why don't you have a turn at the whiteboard? You can draw stuff. Why don't you try the red marker? It's pretty cool too." And it's just like, come the fuck on. Like, let me explore these things. Let me find them. Don't shove them down my fucking throat.
Now, you know, of all things in this world that I hate, it's to agree with Jeff Gerstmann from Giant Bomb because he is fat.
How's that different from us? Well, out of three of us anyway.
Two out of three. Let's be clear. William Miller's very fit.
but he said this thing in his review of the game that I thought was so spot on and also so incredibly sad that that I thought it was worth mentioning. He said that this game is so bad that it makes me wonder if the original Duke Nukem was even that good to begin with. Or, like, our standards were just so low back then that this is what we thought was good. And it's like, you know what? You're right. Like, was Duke Nukem really that good? Maybe, like, because, yeah, I was probably, I don't know, when did it come out? Let's say 96, maybe, the original Duke Nukem? I was, what, maybe 15 or something? No, not even that, like 12. It's like, yeah, maybe Duke Nukem really wasn't that good of a game. And we just as a industry didn't know that things didn't have to be so bad.
I don't know. Like, I mean, I played through all of Duke Nukem again when it came back out on XBLA, and you know, it was enjoyable. Like, I, you know, as...
Right, but, like, it's humor. It's people like, oh, the humor is so much better in the original. It's like, was it? I mean, it's just like, yeah, oh, look, they stole lines from Army of Darkness, so it's funny, right? It's like, it wasn't really that clever, right? Not really.
No, I mean, at the time it was... I mean, it was also a lot more fitting in Duke 3D than the quotes are in Duke Nukem Forever. Like, it's sort of like, I don't know, like we talked about this in 3D Dot Game Heroes too. Like, 3D Dot Game Heroes quotes a lot of other games, and it's very referential, but it doesn't do so with any amount of personality. And that's the difference between Duke Nukem Forever and Duke 3D. In Duke 3D, it's, you know, I don't know, like, he misquoted movies and stuff, but I don't know, just the way it was done had personality. Yeah. And this one, he's just quoting movies.
Yeah, no, you know? and it's just... There's one part that I watched. I was watching this video, and there's a Duke's in a, I don't know, let's say the alien hive or whatever. It's underground, and on the wall there are these things that look like three breasts, and then you hit the X button, and Duke slaps him around. And he's like, look at that. It's like, oh, Jesus.
Well, it's not just they look like breasts. They are breasts. Like, I didn't play this level, but I did watch this on the Giant Bomb.
Yeah, it's like,
their quick look. They are literally breasts growing out of the wall, and you can smack them, and... You know, milk part. You know, it's like milk spray particles shoot out of it.
It's so, and then, like, you're and then Duke ashamed just sits there and embarrassed.
You know, well, like Duke will actually say stuff like "got milk," and I'm like, "Are you fucking serious?" Like, it's not even funny. Like, I just facepalm in shame, but not to, you know, not, you know. The thing is, like, this level, you're smacking these alien wall tits. In the middle of an alien gang rape.
Can you imagine, like, the fucking meeting where they came up with that? They're like, all right, we're going to put some tits on the wall, and you're going to slap them around. And everybody's like, okay, that sounds great. Done. We'll have
Who's
our animators get on it.
Wall tits? Dude, you totally do got milk. No, but the thing is, this level this takes place in is just the most... unintentionally disturbing thing that I've ever seen in a video game. Like, it's filled with, you know, women that are being, like, assimilated and literally raped by alien cock. And there's, I'm not kidding, they're just, like, writhing and making these sounds that are simultaneously, like, orgasmic and sobbing. So picture Duke Nukem, or picture a player sitting there playing this game as Duke Nukem, just repeatedly slapping wall tits to get all of Duke Nukem's quotes, while you hear sobbing from raped women in the background. That is Duke Nukem Forever.
Well, when you put it that way, it does sound pretty bad.
And, well, like, there's one part where there are two twins. They're ripoffs of the Olsen twins. I think they're called the Wholesome twins, and Mary-Kate and Ashley Wholesome. And they are two girls that gave you a blowjob in the intro to the game, but they are in this level and they have been raped and impregnated by alien cock. And they're sitting there and they're begging you to take them back, promising they'll lose the pregnancy weight. And then you kill them.
Wait, if you wait long enough, they'll explode.
Yeah, if you wait long enough, aliens explode out of their naked bodies.
So it's just sad.
It's trying way too hard to be Duke Nukem, and it comes off as retarded. And I've like the difference that you read about in a lot of reviews and stuff. I mean, like, Duke Nukem 3D is the funny guy at a party who got too drunk.
Okay. That is an excellent.
And he's being crass and vulgar, but he's a funny guy, so you laugh at him.
Right. It's like, you know, Blake when he doesn't know where he is. If he's like, Blake, where are you? It's like, pussy waltits.
All the time.
speaking of which, I just spilled my drink all over my fucking recording equipment. Y'all keep talking. I'm gonna go get some napkins.
Yeah, so Duke Nukem 3D is the funny guy who just got too drunk and he's being crass and vulgar and he's talking about tits and pussy at the party, but he's a funny guy, so you're laughing at him. Duke Nukem Forever is the 50-year-old creepy uncle who shows up at the party and just starts screaming, "Hey guys, I'm gonna jack off into the punch bowl. Isn't that gonna be funny? Look at me, my cock is out. I'm jerking off into the punch bowl. Am I funny yet? People like me? I'm still jerking off. Look, I'm coming all over the place in the punch bowl." And it's just, it's not even remotely funny in any capacity. It's watching this, I felt the first time something I've ever felt watching a game is shame. I have never felt shame about a video game before in my life. And I have seen Custer's Revenge. I have seen every possible thing you can do in Grand Theft Auto, Postal 2. But the thing is, all those games can do it with some amount of tongue-in-cheek, and it's funny. There is nothing funny, even ironically, about Duke Nukem Forever. It is a piece of shit game. It can't even be a decent shooter. I mean, objectively, facts-wise, they didn't add a single weapon. They didn't add a single enemy type. Its big innovation is jump pads, which we saw in fucking Quake 3. It's it's a fucking relic that should have been canceled a long time ago. It's, you know, like we were talking about, you know, like the last 2 years have ever really been the real development of Duke Nukem 3D, and that's what Gearbox has done. And, you know, I theorized, I don't know if I talked about this in the show, but my theory was that, you know, they just threw everything out, okay, and then maybe they got some assets from 3D Realms and everyone who in TripTech and whoever worked on it before, and Gearbox just basically made the game from scratch. And, you know, I theorize that, you know, it'll be an okay game. It'll be, you know, adequate. It won't be anything mind-blowing. It'll just be another shooter. But seeing the game in action and playing the first maybe 15 minutes of it, it's obvious that that was not the case. If they had done that, it would have been a halfway decent game. But it's obvious that they had some half-working piece of shit from 3D Realms. And Gearbox was like, "Look, guys, this game is a fucking train wreck. Let's just do what we gotta do to get it running on the 360, and let's get it the fuck out of our office."
Yeah, I think that's exactly what they were told to do. Like, 2K was like, "Look, you guys got this now. Do it. You got, you know, 18 months or however long it took them to actually do the development on this thing." And I bet that's exactly what they did. They got a build from 3D Realms, and they did the best they could. I mean, honestly, like, if you were 2K and this game has been in 10 years in development, you're not going to listen. You're not even going to entertain the notion of restarting this thing. You're a corporate dude sitting in an office. You're like, just take it and do something with it. Don't restart. Take what you got. Make it the best you can. I bet that's exactly what happened.
I mean, honestly, like, if we were a game company and we got the rights to this game and essentially, 3D Realms said, "We want you to respect our design decisions, and we have all this cool stuff in the game. We want to see it in the final product, and it's going to have wall tits and alien rape, and Duke's going to make dick jokes every 5 seconds." And if that was us, I would have just been like, I would have facepalmed and be like, "Look, guys, just get it running, get it the fuck out of our office. I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah,
I don't want to deal with these fucking jerk offs. I just want this game out."
Such a shitty position to be in, too. Like, I'm sure those guys, like, did, you know, they did the best they could do with the constraints they were given. And
I mean, you guys are trying to make excuses. There's no excuses for this. There's none.
I think there are, though.
No.
I mean, I honestly think they are. I don't think 2K would have let them reset this game and do it from scratch
way. If I'm the studio
I think they should have, and in 2 years they could have. They could have been like, "Look, Gearbox, you have this cool engine for Borderlands. Just reskin it as Duke Nukem."
Yeah. I mean, yeah, would it have been so hard to reskin Borderlands as Duke Nukem? Really?
But again, like, it's not. But if you're the guy at 2K Corporate making the call, you've seen this game in development 10 years, you see a product objectively that's almost finished, right? It's almost there, even though, you know, we know it's shit. To some guy on paper, it's like, okay, this has got another year or year and a half development time left in it. We're going to give it to this studio with a proven track record. They're going to polish it up and get it out the door because 3D Realms obviously couldn't do it. That's the decision that was made, I think. Not, you know, I don't think that would have even been possible to reset this game and do it from scratch.
Yeah, I think, you know, sort of the way I'm looking at it, is 3D Realm spent whatever it was, 12, 13 years, making this statue of human shit. And just doing all these horrible things, like, you know, just using all kinds of fucking bodily fluids to make the most putrid thing known to man. And Gearbox came in and they put the for sale sign on it.
I think you're giving Gearbox too much credit. I mean, there's no reason. If I'm Gearbox,
why wouldn't we, though?
Gearbox and I have a brand, like, we have a brand that gamers know, right? Gearbox. We make games. People like our games. Why would I say, okay, well, we're going to put out this complete piece of shit just because, right?
I don't think they had a choice. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like,
I mean,
having
I've been in the situation where, you know, like, for instance, we've gotten, you know, say, like, a half-done game from another person, another developer, exactly, or something, and we're given the direction to finish it up, use their code, and, you know, don't throw anything out, because the thing is, like, management types hate throwing stuff out. You know, I think people in general don't see the value in wiping the slate clean and just starting fresh. So, I mean, I think it's very possible that Gearbox probably kicked and screamed about it, and 2K, you know, 2K or maybe it was, you know, it could have been a contractual thing between them and 3D Realms when they got the IP. Like, you know, 3D Realms could have been like, look, we'll give you the IP, but you have to do this and this and this and this.
Right.
So, they might have even said, like, you got to use our levels, you got to use our design, you have to have wall tits.
And I'm telling you, look, when you work for one of these big publishers, 2K especially, you do what you're fucking told. And they had to do that. I think that's what happened. I can't fathom how Gearbox knowingly, I could see how they would knowingly sign up for this. The allure of the Duke is strong.
Right. It's not, you know, a terrible
I'm
IP.
Sure. They signed up for this thinking, man, we're going to knock this thing out of the park. And then they get the shipment in and they're like, oh, shit. Well, now we got to do the best we can. So I think that's what happened. But anyway, moving on from this, the story is not over.
No.
So all of this, you know, all of this terrible press starts rolling in. And the company that 2K has hired to handle all the PR for this game, called the Redner Group,
This is what I want to know more about. What are these, like, mysterious PR groups?
I don't know. Here, let me get this up here.
They're like Lampreys.
The Redner Group. Here's from their website. The Redner Group, a full-service public relations and marketing agency, provides strategic navigation through an ever-evolving media environment where the old rules of journalism no longer apply.
You mean like doing a good job?
We develop innovative messaging platforms designed to strengthen the ever-changing relationships between brand and consumer. Okay, so anyway, that's the Redner Group. So they were, I guess, doing all the marketing or whatever for this thing. And they issued this statement on Twitter that said, look, if you give this game a bad review, we as in 2K, will not give you pre-release copies of games anymore.
It implied that. It did not specifically state that for the record.
It said, too many went too far with their reviews. We are reviewing who gets games next time and who doesn't based on today's Venom. That's what they said. And so that happened. And 2K was like, that is not true. They don't represent what we mean, and they no longer work for us. Fired. They issued this apology and all this stuff, but it's like, this is the way it works.
Everyone is trying to distance anybody that's supporting Duke Nukem at all. Like, you've got to get as far away from them as possible.
Well, what was interesting about this article on this I read is that, like, this is not an uncommon thing.
No,
like,
this happens all the time.
Yeah, it happens all the time. IGN gives a bad review to some game. The publisher, you know, puts them in the doghouse for a couple release cycles. But this is the first time that it's been, like, a public threat like that. And that's kind of what all the hoopla is about. But anyway, it's a mess. It's an absolute mess.
Yeah, everybody's just ashamed. Everything surrounding this game is just deep, deep shame.
So my old roommate, Aaron destroys games. It bothers him when he can't beat a game. Like, he's like with He's like me with books. Like, if I start a book, I must finish it. I don't care how bad it is. I will always finish
or,
a book.
Or me with pepperoni pizzas. I can't stop.
Blake starts one, he will finish it. So anyway, he started this game, and he's in like hour two, hour three. He hates it. It's terrible. And he's like, I need to finish this game. I'm going to find the fun somewhere in this game, either by breaking it or whatever. But I'm ashamed that it's on my Steam account. I want like an anonymous mode for playing on Steam. So people can't see that I'm playing this thing.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, just, man.
I think I've got it figured out. So, 3D Realms, right? I mean, has been working on this game for what? 13, 14 years before they gave it to, you know, to whoever, then gave it to Gearbox. Like over a decade. So think, you know, every company needs a business model. They need a customer. In most cases, that customer is the player of the game, right? They give you money for the game, and you give them a game, and money is exchanged for goods and services. I think that something special and something different happened with 3D Realms, and this is my theory that I just came up with. So I don't know if it's sound or not, but I think the customer for Duke Nukem Forever wasn't the player of the game. I think the customer of Duke Nukem Forever were publishers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I think 3D Realms made their money by convincing publishers that they were sitting on a gold mine by publishing Duke Nukem Forever, and then they just sat there and jacked off into their keyboards for like 14 years. I swear to God. Well, think about it. If we made a game, right, that made us so much money and was so well respected that we were so well off that we could just sit there and jack off into our keyboards for 14 years, wouldn't we?
I would like to think we wouldn't, but we would.
Think about it. Like, what's better than, you know, like if I'm speaking from the perspective of a company like 3D Realms, the type of guys that make Shadow Warrior and Redneck Rampage. Okay, what's better than having a super awesome IP and making money by making another game in that IP? Having a super awesome IP and making a lot of money by not making another game in that IP. No, seriously, they've just sort of ridden the Duke Nukem wave for 13 years. And the thing is, it shows, like, they weren't doing shit.
That's, you know what, that is true. 3D Realms has not done anything. Nothing since Duke Nukem. There has been no talented or good product has come out of that publisher since Duke Nukem 3D.
Yeah, since Duke Nukem 3D, we've got Shadow Warrior, who features an Asian character named Lo Wang, who makes a lot of like fortune cookie jokes. I forget what it is, but
at the same time, both of those games were kind of like almost mods of Duke Nukem. I believe they ran on the same engine.
Yeah, it was the same.
I mean, that's understandable. You're going to have some cash-ins on your assets. That makes sense, but you're right. There's been no original good like design to come out of that studio in a fucking at least 15 years.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, you look at Duke Nukem Forever, which is clearly not been redone from scratch, right? I mean, it's clear to see that in the videos, in the gameplay. Like, it's got relics that are like 10 years old in that game. It's this weird patchwork quilt of everything that has been wrong with shooters in the last decade. So it's obvious that this is the product of their entire development cycle. And it's fucking garbage. Like, seriously, it took you guys 13 years to come up with this. That has convinced me that they've really done nothing but jerk off into their keyboards since Duke Nukem 3D. They've been sitting on their laurels and jumping into fucking vaults full of golden coins like Scrooge McDuck or Tunster Dennis. Like, it's just, they've done nothing. They have played the entire game industry for a fool, and it's worked. They made a shitload of money. They lasted for 12, 13 years before they got sued out of existence.
Yeah, it's really sad that this is like the most saddest pathetic video game franchise release of all time. This is the just the Oh, God. Oh, God damn it.
It's a veritable renaissance for the BDPE, though.
This show pretty much wrote itself.
Justin Fick was put on this earth to shit on this game.
Well, man, we have gone on a Duke Nukem shitting tangent. I mean, shit, it still smells like cherry vodka in here. We should move on. William Miller, you got any more news for us?
I got one other little tidbit. On the topic of Steam, Steam is going to start releasing free-to-play games. Whoa. So the free-to-play games on its initial lineup, Spiral Knights, Forsaken Worlds, Champions Online, Free For All, Global Agenda, Free Agent, and Alliance of Valiant Arms.
Yeah, speaking of dead IPs, who's like fucking Spiral? Yeah. Oh, no, I'm thinking of Spyro. Is that the same? That's not the same thing.
Not the same thing. I think this is indicative of something pretty cool, even if the initial lineup is lackluster. You don't need an account to play these games. You can go on to, I guess, their website and download them and play them for free. If you want to do any kind of in-app purchases or anything, of course, you need a Steam account. But it's pretty cool. It's like it incentivizes people that aren't on Steam, whoever is not on Steam that plays PC games, to get on Steam and to use it more if you're already on there. I think it's pretty cool. It's a neat outlet for things like Abandonware. You know, if you have your old Ultimas sitting around, you can put them on Steam for free.
Yeah, that's
pretty neat.
Yeah, and why don't we see more of that, right? I can imagine there's got to be a whole list of great PC games from like the early 90s, not Duke Nukem, but that you could totally just, yeah, sign up for the service and get more people on Steam.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, cool. I got my other news I got for you guys. Earth Defense Force Insect Armageddon has gone gold.
Yes.
The game is coming out on July. Wait, not July 4th, is it? Oh, July 5th. All right, excuse me. It should be July 4th because this game is actually, me and William Miller had a discussion about this. This new Earth Defense Force has actually been developed almost entirely by Vicious Cycle. Which before it was just like D3's, Vicious Cycle sort of just ported over the original Japanese game and made and put it out there. But supposedly this is an entirely original game by Vicious Cycle, and it looks amazing. So you've watched some of this footage, right?
A little bit. I have not seen as much as I want to have seen, admittedly.
Well, it's like the first Earth Defense Force, except with jetpacks, what looks to be like a nuclear bomb gun. This looks fantastic. And not only that, it's coming out at $40, which I've always wondered, why don't more publishers and developers go after, I don't want to say $40 is budget pricing, but, you know... Like, you don't know Jack, right? That game is $30. And I don't know how well it sold. I'm sure it wasn't just millions and millions and billions of copies. But certainly that game being $30 made it sell a lot more. And Insect Armageddon being $40 is going to make it sell a lot more.
I wouldn't call that a budget title. I would, I'd call that the not retarded bracket. I mean, like seriously, I mean... I'm really done paying $60 for games. Just give me a shorter game that doesn't have as much filler and as much production value. You know, because the last Earth Defense Force was kind of sloppy.
Yeah,
you know, it had sloppy graphics. Like the effects were weird, and the particle effects were obviously very rushed. But it was a fun fucking game for $40 that I put over 110 hours into.
Wow. Good Lord. Jeez.
I got all the fucking weapons.
The other interesting to note about this, because William, you showed this to me. In the Japanese trailers that are marketing this game, they're like, oh, it's coming from... whereas all the other games were made by Japanese, this comes from an exclusive American developer. Like, that's like one of its bullet points on the back of the box. Made by America. And it's like, man,
well,
what?
There's this kind of feeling in Japan now that American game developers are kind of taking over the crown.
I mean, well, they sure. Yeah. I mean, surely they have, but it seems... It seems sad to me that viably, they would put that on the back of the box as a selling point. I mean, it's in the trailers. It's like, what, I mean, I'm not trying to say, oh, it's so sad that Japanese game development has fallen by the wayside, but yeah, I guess it has. I mean, I guess it, except for a few genres, it's almost entirely dried up at this point.
I don't think that's the case. I think in Japan, it's still a thriving industry, but it's not exporting as much. And I think it's importing more than it's exporting. So this was a common sentiment at E3 this year, and at GDC, actually, from Japanese developers, was like, okay, well, the Americans are now the role model for how games are supposed to be made. And they're making higher quality products. They're innovating. They're pushing the boundaries of the industry in ways that we aren't. And so a lot of that, I think, is rubbing off on the actual marketing of these games, Earth Defense Force being the paragon example of that.
It's just very strange. Had you told, 15-year-old Blake that, oh, hey, games are going to market themselves, Japanese games will market themselves by calling themselves American developed, you know, I would have never believed it. And it seems like such a, but yeah, you're right. It's totally true.
I mean, the other possibility, too, is that, you know, Eastern and Western games do have a distinctive style to them. And it's just possible that, you know, Japanese games have fallen out of vogue. And now, right now, the hot shit is, like, really uber-American games like Call of Duty and Medal of Honor and Medal of Duty and, you know, Call of Honor and
Duty
and
on my medal.
Yeah. Like, Call of the Resistance of medals. I don't know.
But no, I want medal duty. Your duty medal is duty. To get medals.
So, you know, that, you know, those games really seem to be in vogue right now. Like, they're hot shit. But are they still going to be hot shit in 5 years? You know, what's going to be the next, you know, the next thing that sort of sweeps over the, you know, consoles? What genre will that be? What type of game will that be? Will it be Eastern or Western, you know? So, I mean, it just might be, you know, like,
well,
fashionable.
And not to get into a longer debate about this, because God knows, well, we need to move on. But it's almost, I mean, part of that, I think, is that, like, I mean, maybe this isn't true across the board, but certainly, like, America has a greater ability to market to the zeitgeist of the world, right? I mean, if you're a small Japanese studio, you've got much less of a chance than a small American studio of, like, becoming the new thing, right?
I don't know. I mean, I think small studios on either side have an equal chance. Like, they, you know, like, they're both pretty quick, agile entities. You know, it's, I don't know. And it might also just be that more gamers are American too. Like,
could be. All right, well, Weemill, you got any more news for us?
That's it for me.
I got one more, speaking of American games like Call of Duty.
What we got?
There will be a Time Magazine Call of Duty cover. But the thing is, it won't be an actual Time Magazine. Time Magazine, it's lending its front face to Activision as a promotional tool.
Yeah, I don't get exactly what's happening here. They're allowing Activision to make a fake Time Magazine image and use that in their marketing?
That's how I'm reading it, yep. So it'll have like that, you know, like that red Time Magazine, you know, Time across the top with the red border. And then it will have like fake headlines about this, you know, the world stands on the brink of war and has like a picture of Wall Street that's all blown up and in ruins.
I don't know. It seems like a lot of work to get something like, who's like, oh, I'm buying that game now that I saw this fake magazine image.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it lends a little bit of authenticity to the marketing campaign. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, like part of me thinks it's, you know, it's a cool idea. Like, it does lend, you know, like William Miller said, authenticity. Like, it sort of really draws you into the world of the game. Like, here's an actual news magazine with a headline, and, you know, it pulls you into it. Like, I'm looking at an image of it. It's pretty cool. And the other part of me is this is the weirdest crossover between two companies that I've ever seen. Because honestly, how many people who play Call of Duty every day read Time Magazine?
Yeah, right. It seems like there's zero crossover. I mean, I guess gamers are getting older, and maybe you get older, you read magazines, and there's Times trying to market to a younger and younger readership, but it does seem strange.
Yeah. And the other thing, how many of these, like, mouth-breathing, troglodytic people who, you know, who just, like, I mean, I'm not going to say all of them are, but 98% troglodytic fools that are going to look at this and be like, you know what?
I should really start reading
Time Magazine more.
I had no idea troglodytic was a phrase until just now, and I love it. All right, I got one last set of news here for you guys. Just some DLC updates. Crysis 2 is getting a new DLC called the Decimation Pack. Are we so out of words? Like, oh, let's go look up a word. Decimation. Done. It's the Decimation Pack.
Evisceration Pack.
Oh, and also they've got another one called the Retaliation Pack. Come, oh, nice work, guys.
The Dilapidation Pack.
The Masturbation Pack.
The Condemnation Pack.
It's coming out.
Dude, why don't they hire me for this shit? I can come up with this shit all day.
Yeah, I want DLC Pack Namer Specialist. Y'all call
the
me.
The Emasculation Pack.
It's coming out on June 28th. Going to cost $10. Multiplayer maps. Did either of you guys ever get much into Crysis 2?
Nope.
Not really.
I don't know. It's just like, it's another shooting game. Also, we've got Mortal Kombat is getting some DLC on June 21st. Its first DLC pack is going to feature Scarlet, who is apparently, from what my understanding of it, this was in like Mortal Kombat 2. If you put in some weird button combo and you could bug out the game and it would combine, like, you know, the ninja girl with the red outfit and the ninja girl with the purple outfit or something, somehow you could bug the game and get a red outfit. And so that developed a name, and like now they're making it into a real thing, which I think is cool when like things that aren't real and are just kind of rumors, they make into real characters. And they've done that a lot with this new Mortal Kombat.
Combat-tation Pack.
Just think, you are stealing all of the names. they are not going to have any.
The Fatalitation Pack.
Yeah, it's going to be $5.
I'm copywriting all this shit. I'm going to be the new Lodsis.
It's coming out on June 21st for $5. And I also think this is going to be the one that features we talked about this, the pre-order costumes. They're going to add that in. And supposedly, I don't know if this is going to be in this pack, but they're going to have Ermac and Rain and some other DLC characters coming out in the next few months. So, cool to see it supported, but, you know, I guess, yeah, what else do you have DLC for in a fighting game? I guess that's really all you can do.
Outfits, yeah.
Maybe some characters. Anyway, there you have it. It's time for releases.
I can kick us off with the first couple here.
All right.
So, first up, we got Dungeon Siege 3. Comes out for 360 and PS3. So this is the next incarnation of the Dungeon Siege franchise. So I personally never got into Dungeon Siege, but I hear tons of good things about it.
I've never gotten into Dungeon Siege. William Miller, have you ever played Dungeon Siege? You don't play things. Why am I even asking?
Yeah, I played that.
He's like a sad little boy.
Yeah, I played that.
Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time 3D on the 3DS. You know, I'm into the 3DS, and I'm into Ocarina of Time, but still don't have a 3DS yet. Do you have one of these tapes? Weemill, you got one, right?
Yeah.
I've been on the fence, and like I've been leaning toward getting one like a bunch of different times, and then I'm like, do I really need a 3DS? But I want one, but do I really want a
3DS? Yeah, I think the second rev of the 3DS is going to be really cool. I wouldn't be surprised if next year we see a 3DS Slim or something that might be worth holding off for.
I keep hearing like fun things about it. Like I saw a tweet from E3 that someone like retweeted it, but he's like, I was in the men's room at E3 and I just street passed Reggie Fils-Aimé's me. And I'm like, that is kind of awesome.
Let's see, William Miller, you want to take the rest of these releases there, because there's not too much after this.
Yeah. All right, we got Fear.
No, that's Fathrier.
Fathrier.
Yeah, don't take your naming ideas from Fast and Furious 3. That's not where you want to get it from.
Yeah, this is Day One. Day One Studios is right beside Firaxis. They're like kind of in the same neighborhood.
I thought Monolith made this. Monolith?
Day One. Day One has made all the Fears. That's all they make. Fear.
Wait, I thought Monolith. Damn it! Now I gotta go look it up. No, because Day One. No, they did not do the original. I gotta prove you wrong now.
Now they may not have done the original, but Day One's owned by Warner Brothers. They've done it. They've done the last Fear, and they did this Fear, and I think they did the first Fear. I'm not sure.
If I could.
While you're doing that, we got Shadow of the Damned for PS3, Gods and Heroes, Rome Rising.
Actually, and Shadow of the Damned, before we go too far ahead, this sounds kind of cool.
Talk to me, Justific.
It's the new Suda 51 game. New Grasshopper manufacture heat. So I kind of want to see what this one's about.
Hmm. Yeah, for the record, Monolith made Fear 1 and 2. Day One is making Fear 3. And because Day One has done a lot of these, like, I can make this game too. Didn't they do like Daxter on the PSP, I think, Day One Studios?
I don't know. I don't know anyone from, like I consider myself, you know, pretty integrated into the Timonium, Maryland area, like game development scene. I know lots of developers in this area. I know no one from Day One.
No. Okay. Day One developed Mech Assault, Mech Assault 2. Well, I guess, I don't know. It also lists them as developing Fear as well. So I don't know. Maybe both companies have had a hand in this. I don't know.
Yeah.
Had we done any research before the show, we could answer this for you, but we haven't. Are there any more releases?
Trenched comes out for X-Bla.
No, what is that?
It's the new Double Fine.
Really? Man, yeah. They're putting out games
supposedly it's getting phenomenal reviews.
What is it about?
No idea.
Let's see. I'm gonna look at a screenshot and I'm gonna tell you. From one screenshot,
It looks very combat heavy though. It looks big robots, big guns kind of thing.
This is interesting to see because their last couple of releases have been, I wouldn't say family oriented, but certainly family, stacked and. What was the one before that? Costume Quest.
Yeah.
This one looks a little more. I don't know. We'll see.
It's a mix of mech combat, strategy, defense, and off kilter sense of humor.
This could be very cool, or it could be Brutal Legend. So who knows at this point?
I don't know. Like since they've gone X-Pla, Double Fine has been hitting a lot of home runs.
They have. All right, well, that's about all the releases we got. Let's hit up feedback here real quick and call it a day. All right, guys, first we got a voicemail from our favorite listener.
We've already done our judgment.
Yeah. Here's a voicemail. I'll play for you guys.
It's TK. Blake, about your, statement that the forum is, low on energy. Well, I haven't edited it, how to, maybe put some energy into it. Bring Battle back, because
That's all he ever suggests.
You promised us that if we'd stop talking about Battle, you'd bring Battle back. But Blake, I am...
Again,
dying.
TK, Battle does not come by request.
Right.
It will be there when it is there.
You have to earn it.
It comes when it's ready to come. And no sooner.
Right. I need Battle. Fucking Battle. Bring it back.
This is how all his voicemails end. They're just like sad whispering.
Just tell me what to do now and I'll record it and I'll, send it in or, just fucking get it out there. So, bye.
I'll tell you what. Here's what we're gonna do. We've been trying to do promote the show lately. I've been getting on Twitter and all that. When we get 10,000 downloads per episode, we'll bring Battle back. So, TK, you want battle, you need 10,000 people to download. Get on it. The promotion is your job now.
Or we can make battle a promotional tool. Like, maybe your battle is to wear a sandwich board that has Blake Buck's face on it and wear nothing else. We're nothing but a Blake Buck sandwich board. And walk.
Yeah, it'd be like Die Hard 3.
Yeah, and then walk down Main Street.
Go to Harlem.
Yeah, go to Harlem.
I'm not going to tell you not to do that, TK. Or anyone. All right, we got a couple of emails here. Let me pull them up. Oh, my God. Here we go. I hate when people send us emails, but they send it from their work email, and there's like 6 pages of do not send this email to anyone in this copyright, blah, blah, blah. Where are you? There you are. Wait a minute, I'll take this first one. It's from Pete B.
Pete B writes, Heat D go. I'm making money off of your predictions. Take 2 a couple weeks back. When you clowns joining in? At the moment, it's just me and Candy making bank. Check out the info on the forums or send your heat via PayPal. Me and Candy are both in it for $100 each. PB.
That's right. This is Pete B's running the old investment pyramid scheme, the Ponzi scheme. What is a Ponzi scheme? I don't know what that word means, but I like it.
It's something that we need to start doing.
Anyway, if you guys want to get in on this investment heat, which apparently they allege they're making money, if I had money, I would totally buy into this, but it's hard drinking so much and having money. You know, it's everything smells like cherry vodka.
We should start up another investment ring that just invests in whatever liquor Blake Buck is drinking this week.
Well, go hit up Burnett's this week. You know who to sell this week, Pete B? Sell Take Two and anything related to fucking Duke Nukem Forever. Yeah. Good Lord. And go buy Ace sell. Combat. Whatever that is, go buy Ace Combat. I need that. All right, Justin Fick, you got the next email for us?
All right, I just got it. Hello there, Big Hot Show crew.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait, I don't know. Wait, I sent you the wrong one. That's right, because TK, he sent that for... I meant to send you this
okay.
one.
I was going to say, we almost got to talk about bisexuals. All right. All right, gentlemen. If you are not going to do tapes, then at least do some sort of a discussion or themed shows. The old Mega Man show was one of your best simply because of Blake Buck reading all the boss names and dying when he got to Cyber Beast.
I remember that.
I've forgotten that.
Cyber Beast. That is what our forums are. That's what TK is. He is Cyber Beast.
That
it's
is
not
his
a real
new title.
Thing.
Then continues, wait, screw that. Just do a section where you guys narrate a trailer and add commentary. Especially when Willy gets all class 5 chubular excited, like his flippy flap down below time. Reading of the words conflict revolution from the trailer.
I would like just like that. To state that this email features the word chubular.
That is now a word.
We're gonna have Webster calling us up.
Or it could even be tubular to rhyme with tubular. Keep up the window smashing great work, Wild Penis.
Our last email here comes from TK. It says, Miller, talk about that gay-ass Ubisoft fag at E3 and give a lesson on how not to be a total douche fag in public. Sent from my Windows phone. I had to put that one in there.
What is this? I don't remember who he's referring to.
Yeah, I didn't watch the Ubisoft press event, but apparently he does not like someone in it.
Oh yeah, I know who he's talking about. Yep.
What is this?
I wouldn't quite be that harsh on this guy, but this guy made him like he got up there and he was trying to make jokes. He was trying to be funny and like engage. They called him Mr. Caffeine, I think. And he made like a Charlie Sheen joke, and it just was like, it's awful. It's really awful.
Yeah, there's nothing sadder than someone who's not. The only thing sadder than someone who's not funny is someone who is not funny trying to be funny.
Yeah, that's what this was. It was bad.
Oh, Lord.
Probably the only thing worse than trying to make fucking Charlie Sheen jokes in press conferences is trying to make Olsen twin jokes in your video game. Duke Nukem.
Yeah, and let's just all take a collective shit, yes, for old times, on Duke Nukem here at the end of the show. What a piece of shit.
It is a completely irredeemable pile of dog shit.
There's even a Christian Bale joke in that, where like a Christian Bale looking dude walks on a set or something.
Yes, yes. I remember it starts reading about, yelling at another character.
Like, really? That's your topical humor. All right.
All right, and with three delightful Duke Nukem shits, that does it for this week of the best damn podcast ever. What do you guys think about that?
Good show, Blake Buck.
If you'd like to send us any feedback, it's feedback@bestdamnpodcastever.com or call the listener line 845-BATTLE-9. I got to thank Craig Reed for editing the shows. Let's see who.
Oh, Craig Reed. I got a little bone to pick with you. I hope you listen to this the rest of the show. I tried to listen to episode 83. I couldn't even get like 5 minutes into the show because my audio is totally out of sync with everybody else's. Fix that shit.
And it was good enough. It was close enough. It was a little out of sync.
I didn't like it. And like, if it's that out of sync at the very beginning of the show, it's just going to get worse. So pay a little more attention. You're doing a great job, but listen to the show before you put it up there.
Let's see who else we got to thank. Yeah, go check out the forums and TK and Suho Sushi in the forums for helping us out with all that jazz. And I think that about does it. So from all of us here at the Best Damn Podcast Ever, I'm Blake Buck.
I'm Lee Miller.
I'm Justin Fick.
And we'll see you next time.